Dr. Sam Blackman often encounters kids during the toughest stretch of their lives. He's a pediatric oncologist, so any kid he meets on the job likely has some big problems. He says when he tells people what he does for a living, they tend to look at him like his dog just died. Childhood cancer is scary. But he says sometimes, the majority of the time actually, the kids are all right. He tells this story of a case very early in his career when he learned that lesson.
I was on my way out the door, my pager went off, and it was a nurse at a hospital across the street from Children's Hospital in Boston called Beth Israel Deaconess Hospital, which is not a pediatric hospital. And she said, we need you to come over. And I said, you clearly have the wrong person because I'm a pediatric oncologist. You must have wanted somebody else. And she said, no, we really wanted you. And they said, well, we want you to come over to the maternal fetal medicine unit. And I said, all right, let me make this a little bit clearer. I'm a pediatric oncologist and neither maternals or fetals really fall into my remit. And she said, no, really, you just need to come here. I said, fine. And I went into this radiology suite and they said, there's your patient. They pointed to like a blob on the screen and it was an ultrasound image. And I said, all right, tell me what I'm looking at. And they said, there's a baby. And I said, okay. And they said, that bright spot, and they pointed to a bright spot on the outline of this child's spine. They said, that bright spot should not be there. Okay. And I had been at this now for maybe a year. And there are things that you typically see. You see leukemias and you see children with solid tumors. But, you know, a 35-week fetus was way outside of what I had expected. And I said, well, I guess I got my research to do. So I did what most normal people would do. I went to Google and I said, what do you do about a fetus with a tumor? And Google spit out a bunch of references to papers on fetal spinal cord tumors. And unfortunately, most of them were in Japanese. And so Google Translate, what do you do here? And there was an urgency to this because it was clear from the images that the tumor was invading the spinal canal and pressing on the spinal cord. If this didn't get fixed soon, that this child was going to be at risk from being paralyzed, you know, essentially from the waist down. So we put all this into place, and that Sunday they delivered the baby by cesarean section, and Monday we set this whole plan into motion. The surgical team in the operating room, putting a line in the child's subclavian vein and doing a biopsy of the tumor and getting a pathologist there to come up with a diagnosis off of a very small specimen. And I remember having to do a bone marrow biopsy on a child, and you've got this relatively big needle and this incredibly small baby, and you're trying to suck some bone marrow out of their hip, which is terrifying to do for somebody who's never done it before. And we put all of these things into place, and at the end of the day, we came up with this plan and we presented it to the child's parents. We said, this is what we think the diagnosis is, and this is what we are proposing as a treatment plan. And we'd like your permission to get started. And telling this to people who've just had a baby is a very hard conversation to have. There are so many different things to consider. Most pediatric cancer requires the use of multiple chemotherapy drugs, and chemotherapy drugs in general excel at killing rapidly dividing cells. Newborn babies are all rapidly dividing. I mean, in adults, our rapidly dividing cells are the ones that make our hair and the ones that line our digestive tract from our mouth all the way through our intestines. And that's why when you get chemotherapy as an adult, your hair falls out and you get sick to your stomach and you have diarrhea. And to factor all of that into a newborn child is a daunting task. So the parents consented to this and we got started, and this little baby got chemotherapy on his very first day of life. And this child, he he did well with his first course of therapy, but it was clear that the tumor had compressed his spinal cord a lot. He was in a breech position when he was delivered, and his legs were unbelievably floppy. And my bigger concern beyond just shrinking the tumor was that he was going to have a lifetime of neurological defects to contend with. So we got the child through his first cycle of therapy, and he was able to go home and then come back, and we did a number of additional cycles. And in the end, the tumor completely disappeared. The before and after images are remarkable because the lesion was really sizable before, and it was completely gone afterwards. And of course, the family was thrilled. I was personally thrilled. But as the oncologist, I had done my part. They don't need you so much, and you tend to sort of go your separate ways. You might see the child in follow-up every 3 months or 6 months or once a year or even less. And so it had been about a year or so. And at the time, I was embarking on a fundraiser for the pediatric oncology program where I was in Boston. And in doing so, I told a lot of people what I was trying to do, and I was thinking how I could fundraise creatively. So I had a party at my house. And the parents of this little boy showed up at the party. And I said, "I'm so thrilled to see you. You get to really get close with these families." I said, "How's Henry?" And they said, "He's great." And I said, "Oh, you should have brought him with. I would have loved to have seen him." And they said, "He's here." I said, "Oh, great." I said, "Why don't you wheel him in?" And they said, "Oh." And I turned, and he walked. He was walking in. And I'd never seen him walk before. He just had this radiant smile. I mean, the thing that I think about when I saw him walk in was just that giant grin on his face. Every single step for him was a privilege, and you could tell. It's been 14, 15 years since that happened, and the surge of emotion that I felt then, I feel today, and I'll probably feel it every day for the rest of my life whenever I think about it. It was one of the most joyous moments of my life. And it wasn't for me. It was just this universal joy of a life that was saved, a child that was truly healed. You know, there are times in oncology where you win the battle and you lose the war, right? You shrink the tumor for a while, but it comes back and the patient dies. Or, you know, I subspecialized in pediatric brain tumors, and you would treat children very intensively and they would recover from their cancer, but they might be neurologically devastated. And this was one of those times where I thought, you know, I won the battle, we lost the war, but no, this child, he walked. And it was miraculous. And I say that with the full meaning of the word, invested there. And I've stayed in touch with his family for the past now 10 or almost 15 years. And I've seen Henry, I've seen him walk, I've seen him ride a bike, he plays lacrosse, he runs around, and he's just this brilliant, amazing young man. And when I think back over my career, and people say, you know, in pediatric oncology, it must be a really, really sad area of medicine to work in, I tell them, no, you don't get it. And I think a lot of people don't necessarily know, because cancer in children is terrifying, especially if you're a parent. But the reality is about 70% of children diagnosed with any form of cancer survive, and there's always things to hope for. Even in the most dismal diagnosis, there's always hope.